Good evening and welcome to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, I'm the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Don't forget you can also take us with you when you're on the move. I always fluff that line every time. And you can go to our website, www.guardiantalkradio.com, and you can stream us live. So if you are at home without a radio, or actually overseas, and hello to all the overseas listeners, you can listen to The Blank Canvas. So I have two artists in the studio with me tonight who will be opening an exhibition tomorrow night at the National Art Gallery. There will be an artist talk, which I encourage you to come out and see, but we thought we'd have them into the studio to speak about their collaboration. This is part of the National Art Gallery's Double Dutch program. This was something that the former curator, John Cox, and I came up with because we felt very much that as an island, we were isolated to a certain degree, and particularly from our neighbors throughout the Caribbean. And as we traveled and we met other artists and we went to other island nations, we saw, you know, a lot of issues that were very similar and a lot of shared history, but also a kind of evolution in the different places that was slightly different due to, you know, different cultural influences. So we thought it would be interesting to bring artists together from the region. So we came up with this idea of the double Dutch, which is the skip rope game, where you have to kind of be in rhythm with another person. And the plan was to have a Bahamian artist then in dialogue with an artist from the region. So that show is going to be opening tomorrow night. And the artists that are in the studio with me are Bahamian artist Kendra Furup. Good evening, Kendra.
Good evening.
And Gabriel Ramos from Puerto Rico.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. We're going to start off, we're just going to introduce the audience to the artist. So I'm going to start off with Kendra, since you're the home girl. And I just want the audience to know a little bit about you. I saw that you moved to the States in 1989 already.
Yes.
Which is quite some time ago. So how did you, I mean, first of all, how did you get into art? Being like, because really back in the early 80s, that was the beginning for specifically women artists. Because when you look at the sort of master generation, there ain't a whole lot of women there. So how were you encouraged as a young woman in the Bahamas? How did you find your path?
Well, I started off, I realized that I was an artist when I was in fifth grade, way back when. And if I tell you when, you'll start figuring out my age, so I won't. I actually went to Queens College and in fifth
QC.
Grade. Yes, QC, yeah. Go Comets. And so actually I made this platypus, a three-dimensional platypus, mm-hmm. out of paper mache. Got really excited, was totally encouraged by my teacher back then. I don't even remember her name. Encouraged and asked to do several projects for her beyond that. And so that's when I realized I was an artist. Mm-hmm. My dad, Max Hamilton, hey pops, is a contractor and entrepreneur. So I grew up in that world. My mom, also now deceased, Olive, was also very crafty and did lots of creative things.
So they were artists, but they didn't know they were artists.
They didn't know that they were artists. And at that time, no one wanted to admit they were an artist, because that was,
yes,
called the starving artist.
Right.
And so when I went to college, University of Tampa, which I teach, that's where I teach right now. I went to college and I actually studied as arts management.
Mm-hmm.
The management being the
right, because there was still a bit of the fear probably that you couldn't support yourself if you just went into the full-on art thing. Yeah,
exactly.
Which is of course
there
still a fear
no
a lot
way.
Of parents have.
And yeah. Just until yeah. recently, my parents yeah. didn't realize that I was actually supporting myself as an artist.
Yeah.
And so I started off as arts management, took a sculpture class, got covered in dust and history is, that's why I'm an artist today. Mm-hmm. And so I'm passionate about it. I wouldn't do anything else.
Well, it's interesting actually that your first experience was with a three-dimensional artwork, because
yes.
you really are a sculptor. I mean, you've gotten into like two-dimensionality and painting and mixing different, and we'll talk about that a bit later,
yep.
like mixing the media. But really you are a sculptor. And I think that's interesting too, because whenever people ask me when I travel, like, how do you identify Bahamian art, you know, aside from it being like by Bahamians,
right.
I always speak about like a materiality. Like, I feel like there's something, you know, very much to do with our surroundings and objects and using our hands.
Yes.
The making. And, you know, this contact with material. And that very often you see the arc here that, you know, even somebody like a John Beadle, Max Taylor, they're taught how to paint and draw, but somehow they end up discovering object and materiality and they sort of bring that into their work.
Yes.
And you're really strong as a sculptor. So I think it's quite interesting, because so many people, when you ask, like, oh, how did you get into it? Oh, well, I was always drawing on things. I was always doodling. But it's interesting that your first experience was actually three-dimensional.
Yes, quite the opposite. My mom, Olive, again, is, I would say she was a hoarder. I'm a hoarder.
She's an installation artist.
Collected many things.
Yeah, yeah.
And so myself, I'm drawn to tactile, touching, feel. And so I'm a collector.
Mm-hmm.
A better word for a hoarder.
Yeah.
But I'm a collector. I'd like to classify myself. So I collect a lot of things and then draw reference to it. I'm very interested in the three-dimensional as a form, even though I do prints. Sculpting and printmaking is similar in that they are process oriented,
mm-hmm.
where it involves many steps. And even if you look at the prints, when you come and experience it tomorrow night,
mm-hmm.
At the gallery, you'll notice that there's a three-dimensional aspect to them, where the frames are deep, there are things that are attached, and so it's very three-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that way.
Mm-hmm.
I also, again, grew up with my dad in construction, and so I'm very interested in materials, how things are put together, how they work. And so I try not to say that I'm only a sculptor,
right.
But I'm very into process, and sculpting and printmaking mm-hmm. lends itself to that.
Well, I think that's also a really interesting conversation, because something as well that I've sort of, you know, now when I tell the history of the National Art Gallery, mm-hmm. of the building, I try not to tell the story through the guy that lived there. So it's called the Villa Doyle because some dude called William Doyle like paid for it. But actually, there's a very deep history of people that built it. And I think, you know, when you look back at our history, the way a lot of creative people were able to engage with their creativity at a time when they couldn't be artists was actually to become contractors, to
exactly.
carve things, mm-hmm. to carve stone, to create stone. And I think, you know, Jackson Burnside speaks about that moment too, when he came back from college and he was really sort of fired up about, you know, Black Power, and he was like, let's tear down Parliament. And someone said, well, no, because actually your ancestors cut that stone. So even though Parliament is a structure that speaks to the colony,
right.
there's another story underneath it. So I think that's actually really interesting that your dad was a contractor too, because I feel like I said, he was probably an artist and didn't know he was an artist.
Yes.
Or had to find a way to channel like a creativity.
Exactly. And I'd even pushing further, my grandfather was a boat builder. I have Uncle Willett, is also a boat builder. And so it carries throughout the
family. It carries throughout, exactly. And your work, for people that don't know it, it seems like you accumulate a lot of objects.
Yes.
And so there's a lot of found objects in your work, whether it's, you know, bits of metal or bits of china or whatever. How do you, I mean, have a big warehouse somewhere?
I have many warehouses everywhere. It's actually everywhere. And my husband, who's pretty funny, every time I pick up something, or if you look in the back of my truck, there's always something there. And he says, you're not bringing that home, are you? But I do have many places where I store.
Of course I am.
I'm fortunate to teach at the University of Tampa, where I have space to store things.
Mm-hmm.
But when I find objects, I'm not trying to take them and just use them in the same content in the work. I try to transform them mm-hmm. into becoming something different with a reference to what they were before.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not just finding objects and using them in the work.
And also your work seems to, I mean, even though you've been in the States now for 1989, long time ago, right? So you've been there for like mm-hmm. decades.
And back and forth.
I mean, you are here very often, but your work seems to not have a nostalgia, but it is connected to your roots here in the Bahamas. Like there's a lot of reference to that. Is that something you consciously do, or is it just, you know, again, a sort of...
I bleed aquamarine, black and gold. I bleed that. I mean, you can't take that from someone. This is my culture. I do come back a lot, sometimes for long stints. I'm back this semester on sabbatical for mm-hmm. research. So, you know, that's what I grew up as.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't take that away. Mm-hmm. It does references. I'm very much interested in culture.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very much interested in how other cultures affect our culture.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's evident in my work. I hope that it's evident in my work. Not that one understands it completely,
mm-hmm.
but I hope that it's evident in the work.
Do you feel sometimes, I remember I lived in New York for a while when I was at grad school, and I always found that, like, I'd gone to school in the UK. My parents sent me off to do that. And so, you know, I had a lot of friends from England and they'd show up. And I always felt like they got more British when they came to America, because there was sort of this clinging to suddenly the accents were totally, absolutely. And they were sort of eating Marmite all day long. And you know, and even I would do it. It was kind of like I had to have baked beans. I'm like, I never ate baked beans when I was in. But there was something about being away that almost made you cling more. Do you feel that at all? Or do you feel like you have to kind of, there's a part that you have to preserve because you're living somewhere where the other culture is kind of constantly hitting you? Or are you just like, you know, It is what it is.
It is what it is. I checked into a hotel yesterday, and the front desk person says, "You behave in a hiss and yes. I mean, you don't sound like you're American." Well, you know what? You can't take that away.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Even living, I'm over it. You know, when you first go to college, like you said, you know. But I'm over it. I this is me.
Yeah.
And I'm very Bahamian.
And now how do you bring up your kids?
My daughter is, we tease her. She's a Yankee. My husband's from St. Croix, U.S. Virgin Islands. My daughter was born in the U.S.
So you're already like a cross-cultural, regional kind of. Good.
Yes.
So double Dutch is just, you know, an extension of your family.
Exactly. And my dad's from Turks and Caicos.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes. But my daughter's, we tease her a lot. Every time we eat Bahamian food, I say, "Hey, you got a little island in you." And she's like, "I'm an island girl." But anyway... my daughter is brought up as a sort of a Afro-Caribbean.
Well, do you feel like it's a different identity, and does that actually affect that, you know, you're obviously perceived in a different way than you would be perceived at home, and also perceived in a different way probably than, you know, a native African-American, right?
Right.
There's something about being an
Afro-Caribbean
that sets you apart?
Yes, there is something that sets us apart. And one of the things that I, she's here, and one of the things that I promised her is that I would let her spend a summer here, because it is a different lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
She likes listening to my stories. I grew up in Yalowela Gardens. Hey, Yalowela Gardens, Old Cedar Street.
Shout out.
I grew up in Yalowela Gardens, where it was a really tight, small community. Not small, but a real tight, tight-knit group community. And I talk about my childhood, which is completely different from her childhood in the United States.
Of course.
She's in the bedroom. She's thumbing on that, you know,
on the iPad,
that thing.
And
I grew up where I was outside.
Outside all the time.
Playing with the kids. You know,
in the
every
road.
Day was an adventure. Yes, in the road. Every day was an adventure.
And my kids tease me all the time because we're constantly driving through neighborhoods and they're like, "Yeah, we know, Mommy. It was all bush when you were a kid." Because I'm always out in the bush, right? And like catching snakes and I don't know, just doing stuff.
Gone all day.
Yeah.
I mean, and I know that technology has a lot to do with how kids are brought up now.
Mm-hmm.
But even culturally, I think it's totally different, my daughter growing up in the United States, than it is living in the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
I think even Bahamian kids with the new technology have a different lifestyle. So I'm anxious for her to experience being Bahamian.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that.
Well, we're very mean.
I
think we're mean. I think we're awesome. But, you know, we take them to an out island every summer. We try to go around to different islands so they'll experience the Bahamas. And we go places where there's no Wi-Fi.
That's awesome.
And we do that for like a week. And
that's awesome.
Because that's like, okay, you have to experience this.
Yes.
You know, you have to just be out, you know, out in the out island, get into that rhythm. Understand that.
Yeah, there's so much rich culture.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many things that one can do.
Yeah, exactly.
And our kids are missing out on that.
Yeah. Okay, well, Lee, we're going to go to a short break. So thank you, Kendra, for your little introduction. We're going to turn to your colleague, Gabrielle, when we come back from the break. So it's your turn. You're up next. You ready?
I'm ready.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So we're just going to go to a short break. You are listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. We're going to be right back after the short break. And welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Don't forget, you can also go to our Facebook page where you can see pictures of who's been on the show, and you can leave comments and like thumbs up and all that good stuff. It's www.facebook.com/NAGBlankCanvas. That's only the one B, NAGB Blank Canvas, if that makes sense. We're on the show tonight because I have two artists who are opening a project tomorrow night, and there will be an artist talk at the National Art Gallery starting at 7 p.m. So I encourage you to come out and support our local artists and are visiting international artists. So the program is Double Dutch, where we put a Bahamian artist in dialogue, the work is in dialogue, the artists are in dialogue, with a regional artist. And for Kendra, we selected, or actually you guys sort of selected, Gabrielle Ramos. So Gabrielle, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me today.
So Gabrielle, you're from Puerto Rico, mm-hmm. but you're living in Florida. So why don't you just like introduce yourself a little bit to the audience, where you grew up, how you ended up in the States, and really sort of you're mainly a photographer, but you have kind of grown into installation because your photography, you create almost sets in a way. So yes. why don't you just speak a little bit about also that kind of engagement? So.
Well, yeah, I'm originally from Puerto Rico and from the west side of the island, Guadilla. And I came to the U.S. to Florida in 2002. Mm-hmm. And with my family, they actually decided to move because of medical reasons. And
okay.
they wanted to seek mm-hmm. better medical treatment. So, and
a story again. So there you go right there.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah,
there's a familiarity that we all mm-hmm. understand. And I mean, I think that's the thing is that we always look at these other places, especially that are yeah. from different colonizers.
Yeah.
Right. We look at the Spanish Caribbean, at the French Caribbean, and we think, oh, we have nothing in common. But actually, we have so much in common. I mean,
yeah,
that's such a Bahamian
yeah.
issue too. So.
So and then while in high school, I always was attracted to art. I always drew and painted. You know, my mother also was a painter too. She
oh, that's interesting.
But not, you know, she's
yeah.
not thinking, you know, professionally.
Mm-hmm.
But she was doing it. So I was always exposed to art
mm-hmm.
in the household.
Mm-hmm.
While in high school, I just decided that I needed to take, you know, a photography class. I was like, okay, let me take this. And while, you know, in elementary and middle school, I always, you know, was doing art. But I was introduced to photography while in high school. And then I took a class, and it kind of changed my perspective on art.
Mm-hmm.
So, like Kendra said, you know, you don't want to be seen as the starving artist. So at the first, you know, a couple classes in college, I decided not to take classes.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I was just like, my parents are not going to approve. They're not going to feel like this is the right path.
Yeah.
So I didn't take any art classes while my first semester in school. So it just, I felt empty in a sense. I was just like, I'm not doing anything creatively. So after that, I decided to take,
I'll just do it as a minor.
Yeah.
Don't worry, mommy.
So basically, I just decided to do it as a minor. Well, or just let's see how
yeah,
this goes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I just decided I needed to pursue it because
mm-hmm.
I felt right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to the University of South Florida and pursued my BFA. And so far, I kept it. I've been exhibiting and doing it. And it just kissed me alive. So.
And what is it about photography in particular that you're drawn to?
I think in my case, because I create my sets, it's about like creating that moment and capturing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that aspect of looking at, you know, presenting that to the viewer, that moment
mm-hmm.
that I see in the set and bringing it in to the viewer to investigate in a sense, because a lot of the sets are quite complicated,
mm-hmm.
so they it's not something that you're gonna go in and pass by. You have to stay there and look at it and investigate what's going on.
Yeah, and also even quite sculptural, I thought, some of the work. I mean, there's larger works. I mean, because we sort of have to describe them for the audience. So you take paper basically,
yeah.
and you cut it and you form it and you shape it and you create these sort of scenes. And actually, when I was looking at some of them, I really thought of theater. A lot.
Yeah,
you know, I really thought of theater sets and even some of the old German expressionists,
yes.
you know, these very
yeah.
sort of surreal, but some of it really becomes sculptural because you have these large papers that are rolled and,
yeah.
and so do you feel like your practice is sculptural as well? I mean, how do you define yourself as an artist? When someone says, well, what do you do?
It's like
Kendra said, right? You know,
yes.
you're not really just a sculptor. You're,
yeah.
how do you define that?
Well, I'm not really, it's funny because they always want to classify you when you're
yeah,
asked
yeah.
what you do. And I always, I think now I've been, it's hard to me to put myself in a box, you know. I'm
mm-hmm.
mainly photography because that's
mm-hmm.
what I've been doing. But I like, I mean, in a sense, all the stuff that I do, even in photography, is creating or, you know, this big sculpture that I'm going to photograph.
Mm-hmm.
And so while in my BFA, I decided to bring that into the, you know, the actual, you know, space. And I it's funny that you mentioned that theater reference, because that comes, you know, along all the time. They're like, oh, you do this big set or anything like that. So, it's creating this visual and this imaginary space for the viewer to come in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's absolutely wonderful. Is anyone, and now you're sort of moving into installation, is that because people saw the work and were curious? Because I immediately think, what happens to all that awesome stuff after you've taken the picture? Did you have a feeling that you wanted to preserve that, or was it someone else, like maybe audience, that were like, it's a bit like junk in your costumes, right? Exactly. You're always like, how can you throw that away?
Yeah. Well, I think because of the essence of the work, it's supposed to be ephemeral.
Yeah.
A lot of the work that...
which is, again, junk in.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's going to be shown at the Fragile Suburbia series, which are going to be in the show tomorrow. Those pieces actually get destroyed afterwards, because they're shot on the water. So, which adds to the element of memory being fragile. So... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love that work. I mean, it's amazing where this guy, it's hard to describe. You sort of created the scene underwater, and it's little sort of village scenes or city scenes, but the you're under the water, so the surface of the water actually becomes the sky in a way. And it's really extraordinary. And of course, it does connect very much to the Caribbean and growing up on an island, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So, how much does that, the both of you really, like, you're still sort of always going back in a way. You're both based in the States, you're based in Florida, but there's a sort of longing. Is it a longing?
I was just going to say yearning, longing for wanting to be back. Or a memory, you can't lose that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's always that element of nostalgia that comes into the work.
I feel like also the fragility.
Yes. Yeah, I think so. I think that's what I'm trying to experiment with the video pieces that are coming in, that I'm doing currently. That element of, deconstructing that, that memory and trying to place it somewhere, and the elements of basically not pinpointing everything that you remember and just placing that. I think on the Fragile Suburbia works, the underwater series, it in a sense is this bicultural element where it's not clear it's not clearly a Puerto Rican reference, but there's an element of the U.S. also coming in, being around it. And so it's kind of like this mix of cultures.
Mm-hmm. It also seems very surreal.
It does.
Yeah. Seem that particular series, all looks, like I said, sort of makes me think of German Expressionism, but those film sets that were all kind of surreal. But it looks very... I don't know how to describe it. It's just a dreamlike.
Fantasy.
Yeah, like a dream, like a dream sequence.
Yeah, I think... because I've been always... attracted to surrealism, so it kind of comes goes into the work. It is a big reference to it's just surrealism just comes into the work.
So now you've only been here for 2 days, so it's a bit of a big question, and you've been sitting mostly at the National Art Gallery waiting for your crate to arrive, so customs, please let it out. But driving around, and we've driven you through like various different parts of the island, are you struck by how different it is? Are you struck by how similar it is? Do you see anything? Like sometimes you go somewhere and you're like, oh my God, you see like something that's actually already in your work that you're seeing here, which is a place you've only been to. You told me you've been here once on a cruise.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's that experience like for you as another island person, but a different, very different kind of island coming to?
Yeah, it's quite funny because when we talk about it, like even with my friend Sharon Over, which is an artist, and Kendra, she's my friend's from Jamaica, she's Jamaican Canadian, and she when we talk, it's funny, we have so many similar things that we have encountered as Caribbean people. So it's quite funny to see those similarities when we're talking, and driving around, you do see things that are quite,
Well, I remember we were driving home and there was a guy selling canepes on the side of the road, and he's like, oh, canepas or whatever.
Yeah, I was like, those are, I know. Yeah.
And he was like, you have canepas? And I was like, yeah, we have canepes.
Yeah, which is, it's quite funny because you sometimes place yourself and don't realize that there's a lot of common things within, say, the Caribbean culture.
Right.
Yeah.
So
we were walking down yesterday and he saw the breadfruits on the ground, and we had that same sort of experience.
Yeah.
Well, we talked about that actually, because we were talking about, when you talked about the canapes, we started talking about food and do you have this and do you have that? And we were like, and we drove past a breadfruit tree and I said, well, do you have breadfruits? And he said, yes. And I said, well, it's funny because, we don't, it's not part of our cuisine.
No, it isn't. No.
Yeah.
And Gabriel couldn't believe it. He was like, what do you mean you don't eat them? And
it's
I was
rare.
Like, it's
We make a lot of stuff out there in Puerto Rico out of them, and people do use them. So I was surprised when they were telling me that.
And I wonder why, because what I think, sometimes how I describe the Caribbean to people that don't know it, I say, well, basically it's like a huge family that was born out of a super dysfunctional family with two really abusive parents, right? And each child manifested that abuse in a different way. One became, you know, an introvert, one became a big slut, one became whatever, you know? And somehow, you know, depending on who the colonizer is and maybe your location even, like, and how close you are to the States or the South America, you know, but it's all, there's this whole kind of basis that is shared, but it all kind of spun out in a different way. And I think that's so interesting. And I think the cuisine has something to do with that, because here, when you look at our cuisine, it's actually very less based toward the Caribbean, and it's more connected to the southern United States and to the UK.
Okay.
Yeah. So we eat grits. Wow. No one else eats grits. And that's a very, like, Louisiana thing. And, you know, we're the only... I thought that was I thought everyone in the Caribbean ate grits. No?
I do not eat grits.
We're the only... we're the only Caribbean country that does.
Yeah.
Yeah, in Puerto Rico, I don't think we... I mean, I never explained.
Yeah, no. Because that's a southern thing. It's from the triangle, southern, from the trade of, like, Alabama, you know, the Bahamas, Alabama. Yeah, exactly. Oh, wow, so I thought that that's quite interesting. But so do you feel like... is it a strange experience? Is it almost like a surreal experience to be somewhere that's kind of similar, but not...
It's true. I mean, you do see the similarities of the U.S., you know, references in. But, I mean, it's...
On the outskirts,
I mean, it's quite, you know, in a sense, it's surreal to that, you know.
Yeah.
That and the environment doesn't speak to the same, you know, kind of food. And
So we're going to go to another quick short break. When we come back, we're going to have Gabrielle and Kendra speak together about how you found each other, how you came together, the work you're working on currently that we hope you're working on today if the crate is out of customs. But come tomorrow night anyway, because there's still going to be an artist talk. Well, the work will be there. But anyhow, it'll be very nice to have a nice audience, and then you can also ask questions and all the rest to Kendra Farup, a Bahamian artist living in Tampa, and Gabrielle Ramos, a Puerto Rican artist also living in Florida. In which city? Tampa Bay area. And they will be opening their show tomorrow night with an artist talk. The show is the series is entitled Double Dutch. The show itself is entitled The Color and the Shape, referring to both of your practices. That's going to be open from tomorrow night through the middle of September, but please come out tomorrow night for the artist talk to listen to Kendra and Gabrielle. You are listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, I'm the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. We're going to be right back after this break. Now wait 1 second. And welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, I'm the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Don't forget, you can also stream us live at www.guardiantalkradio.com. You can go there, you click on the live stream link, and you can listen from your computer. You can also download an app with your iPhone or your Samsung, whatever you have, and you go to the Play or the Apple Store. Not being a technical person, you go and you download it. I did manage to download it on my phone. I do have it, so I can listen to Guardian when I'm in the States even. So you can do that, and you can listen to us all the time, but particularly The Blank Canvas, because we are an awesome show. And tonight I have Kendra Farup and Gabrielle Ramos in the studio. They're two artists. Kendra is Bahamian, Gabrielle is from Puerto Rico, and it's part of a program that John Cox and I came up with a couple of years ago to specifically bring artists from the region together with Bahamian artists to create a dialogue and to really understand, you know, our commonalities, because we do spend a lot of time looking at our differences and being isolated. And we thought, well, you know, let's try to create networks through the region. Let's try to create, you know, support structures through the region. So we conceived of this series of shows, and we have two artists come together to create a sort of a show slash installation slash whatever the artists want to do. In the ballroom of the National Art Gallery, which is probably the nicest room to show work in. And we give them that room to play with, and they got to come up with something. So Kendra and Gabrielle, you've spoken a little bit about your individual practices. So how did you guys find each other? Because, in fact, normally we pick the artist, but actually we call Kendra. We're like, is there somebody you want to work with? And so how did that happen?
So I got a call from Holly inviting me to do the Double Dutch and asking me to find a person. A few months ago, early this year, I had a show at the Morian Art Center in St. Petersburg.
Mm-hmm. St. Petersburg, Florida, not St. Petersburg, Russia.
Yes, St. Petersburg, Florida. The show was called Excess Baggage, which was a series of prints and installation art about culture. Mm-hmm. And so Gabrielle came as a viewer. We had a long conversation. He responded to my work, and we talked about the forms. So that night, he gave me his card. And many of you artists will relate to this. You network, you know?
Yeah.
I was pretty anxious to look at his work because we talked at length that night.
Yeah.
And so I went home, looked at his website, and got really excited and sort of, you know, just sort of tucked it away. And after I got at the call from Holly, I thought, ah, Gabrielle. The reason I'm drawn to his work and I thought that it would be a great collaboration is because the reference of fashion, the reference of pattern, I was intrigued by the use of technology. He's doing some video work.
Yeah. Right, and actually that's something we didn't speak about earlier, but you've started bringing that into your work too.
Yes.
Like you're doing these paintings that have like...
Augmented reality.
That's the word. Augmented reality.
Hopefully I can give the viewers at the gallery an experience of that this week with the Google glasses.
Yeah.
And so that should be pretty exciting. But I'm intrigued by new technology. I'm horrible at digital, like you said. But I teach. The great thing about teaching is I have young kids that are eager to show me how to do it.
Exactly. You can actually learn from your students.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I'm doing that. And I was intrigued by Gabrielle's work, the use of pattern, the video. And and so we met, we got together. We're creating a work. We did some of it in Tampa, and we'll complete it here, where it gives the viewer an experience. It takes the view, there's a memory when you look at it. So we created this feature wall where their two works will be hung.
Mm-hmm.
And the viewer should walk away with, there's a familiarity, especially if you're Bahamian or you're from the islands.
Mm-hmm.
So we're hoping that that's the experience the viewer will get. Also, we have this three-dimensional work that sits in the middle of the room using laser cutting and paper hand cutting. Gabrielle's using hand cutting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so it projects onto the viewer itself. And so, again, that's it's an installation and it's experience.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so it's pretty exciting. It's the reference of breeze blocks.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know what breeze blocks are, they're the cinder blocks, the decorative cinder blocks that we use to partition.
That we use on all our... Is that common in Puerto Rico as well, then?
Yes. I mean, a lot of the structures are being, you know, updated.
Yeah.
But some of the older structures do have them. So when I saw
them... Maybe it looks very 50s or 60s, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So when she referenced them, I automatically, you know, went to that memory of, like, seeing them, you know, with the older, you know, structures over there in Puerto Rico. But one of the things that we also... we're interested in investigating in this collaboration was the use of memory and how memory kind of, you know, gets disrupted and, you know, how things can trigger memories also.
Yes. Oh, definitely. Yeah. Smells or sights.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You
exactly.
suddenly a whole
wave
of memories will come back when you see something.
Yeah. One of the things that we have in common was the element of like patterns and colors and shapes and things that trigger memories. So doing this installation, we're kind of investigating that in the installation and see how the viewer is going to react, even identify with the piece itself.
Mm-hmm.
So when we were talking about it, one of the things that, you know, we decided to experiment. I mean, I never introduced pattern into any kind of paper installation, so this is the first time I'm doing it. But I started with the video pieces, so. You know, it was a little bit risque because sometimes it can go a little bit graphic or, you know, graphic design like.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I thought, it was something refreshing in the work. So, and that's what I liked the way I saw the work, you know, at the Marian Art Center, at Kendra's show at the Marian, was that she was introducing those elements.
Mm-hmm.
And I could identify with them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also the element of breaking the toothy surface. So when I was talking to her about it, I was like, wow, this is new. I never seen this, you know. And mm-hmm. I was quite struck, you know, because the work was really good. So
Kendra's looking all bashful now. Yeah, I know. Yeah. She's looking all bashful.
I know, yeah. But she, yeah, it's funny because some of the things that, even not mentioning some of the elements that I was using, she quite got them, you know, while looking at the work. Mm-hmm. And that was something that I was hoping for the viewer to mm-hmm. catch. So, mm-hmm.
yeah,
it was nice.
So it's quite a new relationship. So, I mean, you know, I mean, as you just say, you met a few months ago. How easy, because I mean, again, like the stereotypical idea of the artist is, you know, you're all super egotistical, which we know isn't totally true. But how easy is it to, how easy is it to really, like, when you come into that room and you have to start sharing? how easy or difficult is that?
Gabriel's made it pretty easy to do that because as we all know, collaboration is hard, especially
it is hard. Yeah,
yeah. But he's made it pretty easy to do that, and so we've agreed to respond and mm-hmm. react to each other's mm-hmm. Work and sort of respect it mm-hmm. in that way. And so I think that
I think probably generosity is an important part of collaboration. Yeah. Yeah.
I think you have to meet in the middle ground in a sense, and hope, you know, you're in the same page of what you wanted to portray.
And even mm-hmm. if you're not, you take it as an experience. I mm-hmm. think this, just as artists, yeah. mm-hmm. we're walking away with this experience, mm-hmm. you know. Yeah. So
there's always something to take out of it, you know, her process, my process. Mm-hmm. We're both really process-oriented artists.
Well, that's something I really know, yeah, but yes. both of you, that came up in both of, you know, talking to both of you, that it's sort of about this ongoing sort of activity. It's not, you know, like cutting the paper. I mean, that really takes a while, and like finding all the objects, putting the objects together. I mean, it's not, you know, just going into the studio and...
Yeah.
buying some paint, and you know, it's really something deeper. So
yeah
the concept of repetition in the work implies that, you know, there's an effort necessary to accomplish it, and that the struggle is sort of worth it, you know. Mm-hmm. And so if you look at the work, you'll see repetition in the images, mm-hmm. Repetition in Gabriel's work, the form, mm-hmm. And so that's really important in the process. Mm-hmm. I know art is sort of varying to digital technology, but I still very much believe in the making.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's really important to me.
Yeah, well, I think that's somewhere we're going to have to figure out just as people, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, again, I don't want to be a Luddite and like reject new technology.
Right.
Yeah.
But there is something, you know, there is a middle ground. And I mean, there is something still. And I think that's why a lot of art, contemporary artists now work with things like slide projectors mm-hmm. and 60 millimeter film, because there is a quality there that is not replicable with digital or whatever. But you don't want to reject digital, so you have to find a way to kind of marry the two.
We have to embrace it, yeah.
And I think, again, the process for the artist and for the viewer, you know, the experience, because what concerns me, I mean, it's great, the internet's awesome, and, you know, especially living on an island, right? The access people have to images and to knowledge, but that experience of actually being in a room, and that's why I'm excited about Double Dutch 2, because, again, as Bahamians, the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas didn't actually show foreign artists at all for many, many years. Because, you know, again, it was about, like, we have to establish our culture. We have to establish who artists are. But I think that's doing a disservice to the audience and to the local artists. Because, you know, as a young Bahamian artist studying at COB, you're not walking down the road and seeing a Jackson Pollock and a Donald Judd or a Dan Flavin, you know, and just to even have the experience of someone else's point of view, to look at their work is so important, too. So... and that's my, you know, with digital, it's like everyone gets everything by Instagram, but I think, you know, you do have to be in the, as a viewer, I do think you have to be in the room with the artwork.
I think so too.
You know, to experience that. So there's somehow we got to find this balance between.
That was one of the reasons I was drawn to Gabriel's work too. I don't know that I told you this, but in your video, the movement is very nostalgic in that it has, it's almost like stop motion. Mm-hmm. And so I'm drawn to that.
It feels you know, there's, you definitely get the sense of the hand, you know,
exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and that was something that I was happy that was, you know, portraying the work, because mm-hmm. it's important to me to
that you feel the artist is actually still involved.
Yes.
But it's not just a machine. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I mean, I get all the time that maybe they think it's just animation, but a lot of it, you know, is hand-on.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Listen, I mean, people, my husband was an art dealer, and he represented an artist, and he did these panoramas, and he actually had an old film camera, and he had messed with the mechanism so that he could spin the film and take, like, you know, a 35, like you'd have 35 millimeter film, but it would be 24 shots continued.
Oh, wow.
So it was all kind of, it was all done manually, and there was nothing done in the dark room. It was all printed. And people would argue with us, no, that's digital. That's been done on a computer. And we're like, no, we know the artist, actually, and we can tell you. So that's actually something also interesting is people's perceptions.
Yeah. Exactly.
They see work like yours, and they think, oh, yeah, that's done on a computer.
Yeah.
And they actually don't, and even sometimes you can be like, no, no, that's, it's actually he sat down with scissors. And do you find that people have a hard time believing you still do that? That you still will put yourself through that to like sit down?
Yeah. Well, I get it all the time, even with photography, because of, you know, Photoshop, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, people just think, oh, you Photoshop that, you know, the sky or the area in some of the Fragile Square pieces, even. I mean, it's just part of it. I mean, you have to embrace it. Just I don't keep telling everyone it's not Photoshop, because I don't want to offend, but... it's just it's something that comes with the territory, in a sense. So, but I like that some people are actually, you know, do take the time to look and they ask. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, you know, this is all hand done.
Well, and specifically with the new series, there's really a time based element to it, because I'm just imagining once you're sinking the paper in the water, you haven't got a whole lot of time to get that shot. Because the other ones, the ones that are sets that are, you know, just in a room, you could come back to that, you could stop for the day, you could revisit it. But the ones underwater are really. It's, you know, it's immediate.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah, it's something that you have. We have to take it. I mean, there's no time. Paper just start curling and doing things. And I mean, I like some of those elements. You know, and you'll see some of the pictures. You know, it does have that. You can see the paper already curling. Mm-hmm. But because I like that, I mean, there's no control over it.
Mm-hmm.
But
how much time do you have, more or less? Like once you've got it sunk, how do you do it? Do you do it in a tank?
I do it in a tank. Some of them do have, because I use a stronger paper, so they last a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to have all done, like lighting, you know, the tripod, camera, everything already, you know, set up.
Yeah.
Because once it's there, I can take it out. So.
Right. So you build the set first and then you fill it with water?
I build the set and then I put it in and slowly, you know, because it's quite fragile, start trying to arrange it where it's, you know, because paper just start doing crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And it just happens. I mean, and sometimes they're good. I mean, the first ones got destroyed the first time, you know, like it's just, they got destroyed.
Trial and error.
Yeah.
Sure.
So it's
but like you said, there's something beautiful about that. And that's why it kind of makes me think of Junkanoo too, right? Because there's this, you know, this idea to spend so much time and effort on something and then just allow it, let go.
Yeah.
I think that's extraordinary.
Yeah.
I
mean, it kind of felt refreshing to do it. Just you let go, basically. Mm-hmm. So it's quite nice.
And sometimes even if it's not exactly as you think it might be, that works. Sometimes the discovery of that leads to something else.
Do you have that in your sculpture where
I look forward to it.
Yeah.
I actually do. I mean, I walk into my creating with an idea, a vague idea, and as I create, it evolves, and usually it's not the same at the end. And so I look forward to the journey. I look forward to the accidents. So I, you know, discoveries, not accidents, but discoveries.
Yeah, yeah.
I really look forward to that because that's how I grow. That's how I grow from one piece to the next.
But you also, in a way, there also has to be a generosity there too, because you have to be open to accidents and to not be too controlling. Do you find that is an exercise you have to do to sort of allow yourself to be open to things, or is it just your nature?
It's my nature.
Yeah.
I teach. And so I have students that have a really struggle with that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I try to teach that, try to be open to it, even if it means repeating the process again to get exactly what you think.
Mm-hmm.
But be open to it, because there's this discovery in the...
And happy accidents.
Yes, happy accidents.
So not mistakes, but
it's
happy,
not happy
accidents.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that you settled on the breeze block, because that's such a kind of... like, how did you end up there? Because that's such a Caribbean, something like I see driving around. And recently, we were just talking about it in the car in Washington, D.C. They're building a museum to African-American art in Washington on the Mall. It's going to open in a few months. And actually, the whole structure is the architect, who I want to say it's David A.J., but I have to look it up, was based on the breeze block and this whole idea of verandas and breeze and air and sort of flowing. And it seems it was interesting that then suddenly you came up with that idea and that you hit on that too. It seemed,
you know, one of the great things about not living here sometimes is to be able to come back and you notice things that we take for granted, the sounds, the smells, other than food, but the smells, the
other
imagery.
Than the sans pink rattler.
Yeah. Don't go there. Oh, it's my fave. Oh, but no. Anyway, but yeah, you sort of start to really pay attention. And one of the things that I do with our new little smartphones is to document just mm-hmm. for my reference. It's a part of my collecting also, collecting references. Mm-hmm. And the breeze block, decorative cinder blocks, is a common, I mean, it's everywhere. Yeah. The pattern's different. And so with the technology of laser cutting, I found that it was easy to repeat in a large format. Also, the light. If you look at the breeze blocks, mm-hmm. the light as
well, and the shadows. And that's something that, of course, appears in your work, Gabriel. Man, that maybe, so I'm thinking maybe that was something that appealed to you, is that use of light and shadow.
Yeah, I'm always interested. Shadows kind of make everything interesting. Yeah. They kind of change the environment or the landscape. So, mm-hmm. When I saw her work, using the breeze blocks, we were experimenting also with projection mapping to
and it's also very interesting that you use laser cutting and use hand cutting. So this is kind of a nice, it's really beautiful the way your two practices mm-hmm. speak to each other and have a similarity, but yet you're using these different methods and because I think you don't want to see people that are just doing the same thing. They're very different, but somehow there's a hook that ties it all together.
Yeah, I mean, there's a different mark to it because mm-hmm. I mean, you can tell, but I do appreciate also it's not that I'm against it. I haven't had that time, hopefully in grad school now that I'm going to Cornell.
You're going up to Cornell, to Ithaca.
I'll be able to experiment with that. I don't have to hang.
So we'll see which way it goes. And I think the audience will see how this all works out, the two of you working together in the show that we're going to be opening tomorrow night. So I'm pretty excited.
We're excited.
We're all excited. Customs, let that crate out.
I know.
So again, to repeat, tomorrow night is the opening of the Double Dutch Show, which is part of the series the National Art Gallery is doing to bring a regional artist in conversation with a Bahamian artist. The artists we've been speaking to this evening are opening their collaboration, Gabriel Ramos from Puerto Rico, but based in Florida, and moving to Ithaca.
Yes.
Buy a lot of sweaters. And Kendra Farup, Bahamian, living in Tampa, but still...
Very Bahamian.
Very Bahamian at heart. So we're going to see that tomorrow. The artist talk starts at 7 p.m., so please come out and support the artist and see the show. It will be running to the middle of September, so you can come see that another time. If you can't make it out tomorrow night, please don't forget the National Art Gallery is free on Sundays. We are open from noon to 5 on Sundays, and it's free for all Bahamians and local residents, so there's no reason not to come. It's always free for kids, so you can also come after school with your little darlings and have a look. Just a tiny other bit of housekeeping. On Friday night, so the night after the artist talk, we have another talk with Candace Knowles, who was on the show last week. That talk is about colonial and post-colonialism, the influence of visual art on the Bahamian aesthetic. That talk's going to be also at 7 with Dr. Gail Saunders and hopefully Dr. Ian Bethel Bennett, but his baby is due on Friday, so we're not sure. And then we're going to have a little tour of the show downstairs from Columbus to Junkanoo. So there's a lot going on at the National Art Gallery. Don't forget to check out the summer film program. The next film on August 11th is Beasts of the Southern Wild. And that's it for tonight. I want to thank you both for being in the studio.
Thank you for the opportunity.
And very excited to see the show tomorrow night. So thank you everyone for listening. You've been listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, the director of the National Art Gallery, and you've been listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Thank you so very much for listening, and good night.